If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, to Tyler Perry's credit, Tyler Perry called us up, right? And he said, I can see the pain in you and I can hear it. And I want to let you know that I would never do nothing to hurt you. But the conversation kept going on. Only for Tyler Perry to admit he did start a rumor that I was difficult to work with. He lied. Only for Tyler Perry to admit I was wrong. And when my movie Boo come out, I'm going to say that. Right? Now, here's where, when you did that interview with Kat, I could respect how you do it. Because Kat said, you let them people lie in your face. And your response was, Kat, I don't know if they're lying or not.
Right.
Because I can only take them at their word.
At their word.
Right?
Yes.
Well, we sent you the audio of Tyler Perry. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to take me at my word. I want you to hear his word. And what did you hear that man saying? What did you hear that man saying?
He said it.
What did he say?
Is Moni, you know you're not supposed to be recording people.
No. Let me back up.
Okay.
Everything we did was legal. And here's where a black woman really gets the kick in the ass. Had I not recorded Tyler Perry, then it would have been my word
against
his. And then on top of that, it would have been, he's so powerful, we can't even pay no attention to that.
Right.
Well, now I have him on audio, which is legal to do where we live.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We have him on audio. And do you know what some people then said? Why would you record him? Just like you sat there and said, you know what's illegal to... But did you hear what the man said?
I
violated you.
Yeah.
I mistreated you.
Yeah.
Do you know, Shannon, that's cost my family tens of millions of dollars?
Yeah.
Over a lie and a rumor?
He's gonna compensate you for that?
I want you to look in your camera.
Yes.
And I want you to talk to Tyler Perry because you heard what that man said. So ask him, will he compensate my family for that?
Tyler, will you come on Club Shay Shay and let's have a conversation about the fair compensation for what transpired between you and Monique? You can sit right here and she's sitting right here and you and I can have a conversation.
And we'll do you one better. And give me 5 on that, baby. We'll do you one better, Shay. My husband and I'll sit right next to him. See, with this whole situation and some of the people that Kat talked about, ironically, I have this issues with those same people. There were people that reached out to Tyler Perry on my behalf.
Okay.
And I was grateful for that. Okay. There was Al Sharpton, the Reverend Al Sharpton, civil rights leader.
Yeah.
I sent him that audio. He listened to it. He said, baby, what that man did to you was wrong and you're like my daughter. And we're going to have to get him to fix that.
Right.
We didn't hear from Al Sharpton for 6 months. The next time we saw Al Sharpton, he was on a podium talking about we don't need to fly commercial because we can fly Tyler Perry's private jet. I said, that's why maybe I'm not hearing back from him. Okay. Then we had our beautiful sister, Stephanie Mills.
Yes.
Okay. Who is, she don't play.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I told her what happened, sent her the audio. Now, I don't know if she listened to that audio or not, but however, she called Tyler Perry. She said, Monique, Tyler Perry does not want to revisit this. Okay, fine.
Right.
While we're on the phone, Tyler Perry calls her back and says, I will meet with Monique, but not with her husband. Now, you ready for this?
Yeah.
And then Monique has to apologize publicly to say, Oprah and I had nothing to do with messing up her career.
But that'd be a lie.
I look in the goddamn camera.
I thought that was a stage the way you...
Look in the camera.
Yes.
Because you heard it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So when you hear what this man is saying, so I said, Stephanie, tell Tyler Perry, never will I meet with him without my husband. And I owe no apology, so I'm not going to give one. That goes away. Kevin Hart. Now, you know when Cat Williams said gatekeepers?
Yes.
Kevin Hart.
Mm-hmm.
I do his podcast.
Yes.
And I want y'all to re-listen to the podcast so you can hear it for yourself. When he first comes on, he says, you're like my mother. You're like my aunt. You're like my sister. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then we do the podcast. We speak about the Tyler Perry situation. Oprah Winfrey, he said, I don't really know Oprah, but I'm going to reach out to Tyler. I appreciate that. Kevin kept his word. He reached out to Tyler Perry. Kevin Hart called me back about maybe a week or so later. He said, Mo, I talked to Tyler. He said he don't want to revisit it. He said, but I tell you what, let's move past that, Mo. Let's just move past that and let's just do great things. So whatever.
That's what Kevin said.
I want you to hear me, Kevin Hart. Let's move past that, Mo. Let's do some great things together. Don't even worry about it. Whatever y'all want to do, I will partner with you. I'll executive produce with you. You just let me know what you want to do. Now, let me say that before we go any further, because okay. I want to make sure I give Kevin Hart his proper credit. When my family was up against the wall, Kevin Hart wrote us a check and said, here you go. We're forever grateful for that. When we were able to give it back, we said, brother, we appreciate you with some interest on top because I don't ever want nobody to think
feel like they
me
gave
and my
money.
Husband. So I want to make sure I put that out there. That brother really helped us out when we needed to be helped out. Then when he came back with, I got you. I didn't ask Kevin Hart to do anything. He said, I'll executive produce. I'll partner with you. I said, good shit, Kevin, because we're in a deal with Endemol and we're trying to get our talk show back. Mo, whatever it is, I got you. Now, Kevin Hart is one of the biggest entertainers right now in the world,
correct.
Right? And was then. We got off the phone with Kevin Hart. We called Endemol immediately and said, Kevin Hart said, whatever we want to do, he got us. He's going to partner executive use. They was like, oh, this is incredible because when you put Kevin Hart's name on it, you already know what it is.
Correct.
2 weeks go by. We get a call from Endemol. Endemol says, we just got a call from Kevin Hart's manager, Dave Becky. And Dave Becky said, Kevin doesn't want anything to do with Monique. So whatever she told y'all, he doesn't want to do anything with her, nothing. You know, he doesn't want any kind of relationship with Monique.
So what changed between the 2 weeks and when, and plus he gave you a check, you gave the money back, then said he would partner with you, executive produce, whatever you need, Mo, hey, we got you. So what transpired, or what do you think transpired between then that two-week period?
Well, soon as we got off the phone and they told us what Kevin's manager, David Becky, said, I called Kevin Hart immediately. I said, hey, baby, we just got off the phone with Endemol, and they said Dave Becky called them up and said, you don't want anything to do with me. He said, Mo, that's a miscommunication. I can tell you right now. I said, wait a minute. Are you okay, though, with this white man calling them up? Getting in between our relationship after something you said. He said, Mo, that's a miscommunication and we're going to talk Tuesday. Don't worry about it. I'm telling you right now, it's a miscommunication. That was 2 years ago. If you talk to him, I talk to him. I've never talked back to Kevin Hart again. So that's what we're faced with. When you allow somebody to come in between a relationship with a woman that you said, I'm like your mother. You said, I'm like these things. I didn't ask you for that. So everything that baby was saying sitting here, everything he was saying was on the up and up. Because when you hear people say, get the anger out your heart. Oh, man, no one's saying he's lying. No one ever said I was lying. it's so easy to discount and devalue because of what we look like.
Right.
However, when it comes to Tyler Perry, I will not allow you to discount or devalue because that is your voice on that audio.
Mm-hmm.
Remember on Good Times mm-hmm. when Penny's mother was whooping up on
yep.
him and she had recorded it?
Mm-hmm.
That's you on tape. So how does it go from you saying you're going to give me an apology to now I owe you an apology?
But what do you owe an apology for?
What could I possibly owe you an apology for when you've admitted? See, when Lee Daniels says to me, because Cookie from the show Empire,
yeah.
I was offered that role. Now, Taraji tore it up, baby.
Right.
It listen
right.
here. However, I was offered that. Then for Lee to call me back and say, baby girl, they said you're too difficult to work with. But you hear on the audio that a man told David Talbert I was difficult to work with. Do you see how that
right.
cost my family?
Yes.
And with no accountability? Because, oh, it's the great Tyler Perry? No, you've got to be accountable for that. Oprah Winfrey, you've got to be accountable for the things you've done with my family. You've got to be accountable for that.
Is there any relationship between you and Tyler and you and Oprah currently?
No. No.
But I thought there was an apology. I read somewhere that Oprah had issued you an apology and Tyler had issued an apology. That's not correct.
No. No.
The only person that's given you an apology.
You saw it. It's Lee Daniels. That's the only person. So we are in a place where we're too afraid to call them for what it is. We're too afraid to say if it looked like a duck and it quacked like a duck, what is it, Shannon? It's a duck.
Right.
So again, you see the struggle of the black woman as I'm sitting here talking to you and you say, Mova, why would you record him? But you heard the man violate me. The first thing wasn't, I can't believe that cat did that to you. It's why would you do it? And we understand it.
Right.
Because we've been conditioned that way.
Because when you had to get somehow, because when you're telling people these are lies,
yes.
nobody is believing Monique. So now, even though you have him record his voice and that's him and he's saying he made it up, now it's no longer, oh man, I can't believe he lied on Mo. Mo, why'd you record it? So now they put the onus back on you.
Where's the win? How do we win? How does a black woman win when you say, here he is right here? And I look to the community and say, how long do we allow us to keep being exploited, used up, taken advantage of? And because we think somebody can give us an opportunity, mm-hmm. we just say, shh, I'm not going to say nothing. If we keep operating like that, Shannon, you're going to have a whole lot of us sitting right here in this same seat, almost telling the same story.
Why do you think Tyler is afraid to meet with you and your husband? Why does it need to be you one-on-one when he meet with other representatives and their client? What is it about you that he feels it needs to be just you and he? Does he think your husband is some kind of negative influence on you? He thinks the husband is saying things that Monique probably wouldn't say if I just had an opportunity to talk to her one-on-one. What do you think that is?
Let me say this. People better be glad my husband is by my side, because there are people in Hollywood that know wherever you act up is where I show up. People know in Hollywood, baby, Shannon, and I don't say it with a badge of honor. It's just what it is. Well, I've had to say, who you think you talking to? And we sitting there with the president of the studio or the my patience level is not going to allow. I've been molested. I've been violated. So the moment I see you trying to do it, we're going to have to address it. My husband is nothing but a gentleman. And you know why people have a problem with my husband? Because he's right to it. There's no, we're going to dance around the bush. He's right to it.
Right.
And people like Tyler Perry, people like Oprah Winfrey, they look at my husband and say, how dare you be so direct?
Right.
How dare you not put your eyes down when you're talking to me? How dare you do that? My husband is also my manager. Why would he want to exclude my
right.
management? It's like, Tyler, you shouldn't want my husband to be there. You
right.
you may want him to be sitting right there so that way we can have a conversation that everyone can be heard.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate you, Shannon, because most people are too afraid. That's heard the tape. They're too afraid to say, no, I heard it. And this is what he said. Mm-hmm. I appreciate T.S. Madison, because T.S. Madison was the first one to say, no, I heard what he said. Mm-hmm. So when folks were trying to jump on her, she not down for the black woman. Listen, baby, y'all don't even understand the fights that sister be having when ain't nobody watching for the black woman.
Right.
So I appreciate you looking in that camera.
Right. Well, I mean, look, sometimes there are some black people, some, not all, some, that my grandfather used to say, Mo, is that if you're not careful, you'll become the very thing you despise the most in a person. Now, what do we despise most about Trump supporters, ex-President Trump, is that no matter what he says, no matter what he does, they give him an out. There's some people in our community, no matter what powerful black people say or do in our community, we'll give them an out.
And we can't.
And we become the very thing we despise the most. What we despise most about President Trump's, ex-President Trump supporters, is that no matter what he does or says, it's okay.
Yes.
We can't do that.
We can't.
If somebody's wrong, like you said, Mo, if somebody's wrong, we have to be man or woman enough to say they're wrong, regardless of what comes along with that.
They don't know. They don't understand what them saying I'm sorry will mean for them. See, when I read the
because
other
that's
day,
not for you. And I'm sorry, it's not for the person that you offended. It's for you, because currently you're in hostage, your feelings, because you have to live with that.
You've got to live with that.
What you've done.
So when you see a woman say, me turning 70, I'm so happy because I've never hurt anyone. Stop it. Stop it. Because there's a black woman that has been calling your name for over a decade that you seem to want to make go away. And I know I'm not the only one.
Would you sit, if Oprah called Mo today, would you sit down and have a conversation with her?
Let me tell you what I'll do if Oprah called me today, Shannon Sharp. We will sit down and have a conversation with Oprah Winfrey. We will sit down and have a conversation with Tyler Perry. We will sit down and have a conversation with the presidents of Lionsgate. We will sit down and have a conversation with anyone that is, I'm going to say brave enough to sit down and have a conversation. But what happens is within seconds, if Tyler Perry was to sit right here, you would say, man, I heard you. What you trying to tell me about this sister? Within seconds, Oprah Winfrey would know that people would say, hold up. And I'll go back to Tyler Perry. You know why Tyler Perry don't want to talk to my husband? Because he can't talk around him. My husband don't care nothing about that man's money. We don't care nothing about your title. We care about your character, brother. We care about your integrity.
And what you going to pay? What you going to pay?
How you going to make it right? How are you going to make it right? Because if I am your Aunt Mary and I really belong to you, as I really belong to you right now, Shannon, I am your sister.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard something that was wrong.
Yeah. How can Tyler Perry make it right, Mo? Give you a job, give you a sitcom, say, Mo, okay, you know what, Mo? Sitcom, you're going to be the executive producer. I'm going to be a co-executive producer. You're going to do the sitcom.
If somebody cost you, Shannon Sharp, millions of dollars.
Yes.
Do you want to be compensated for what they cost you for a lie and a rumor?
Yeah.
So at that time, I was making roughly between $2 and $3 million a year.
Right.
I sat in that for over a decade, like 12 years.
Right.
You do the math. Over a lie that he admitted that he told. Not something I'm making up.
Mm-hmm.
You admitted that, brother. How do you make that right?
I'm sure you got lawyers. Have you had a conversation?
Well, what happens is when you take somebody at their word, time. We don't need to go to no lawyers, Tyler. You know what you did. Just make it right. And if he doesn't make it right, what will our community do? What will our community say? Because today it's me, tomorrow it's you. Then what?
Yeah.
We've got to hold him accountable. What did Kat say? You got to tell Tyler Perry. Come on now. You got to do it, Shannon. You got to tell him.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I had to tell it. Is this all you, or was therapy involved?
A lot of self-therapy. I mean, a lot of times. And I mean, 2014, after my first season, I went and spent 3 months in rehab in Reading, Pennsylvania. And I didn't have a normal off-season. I didn't get to, like, I needed to work on myself. And at this time, like, I learned a lot through that. And it continuously learned as I went on. And this is a, you know, collection of 10 years of not therapy every day, not therapy every week, but a lot of it is with yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to know who you are. Correct. You know who you are. Mm-hmm. You know what you do good. You know what you do bad. You know what you need your team for over here to help you with. Correct. To make you the best version of yourself. And for a long time, I've been independent in the sense that I feel like I can do it all by myself. When in reality, I need family.
You need a team.
I need friends. I need my team of people who want nothing from me, who want nothing but the best and love for me, and people that I can trust. Because a lot of time in the past, I didn't have people around me that I could trust, really genuinely, truly looking out for my best interests.
Johnny, you mentioned that you partied, you liked to drink alcohol. Were there heavier drugs involved other than alcohol and marijuana?
Oh yeah, 100%.
In college?
No.
Once you got to the league?
Yes. That's when the real, like, hiding and reclusing started. And man, I've given Cleveland a really, really hard time. And I think it's all more situation than it is really the city itself. Being in a fishbowl city like College Station ate me up because I couldn't move. I couldn't park my car the wrong way. I couldn't do anything. I was always spotlight.
Yeah,
you couldn't. And then I go to Cleveland, I sign with LeBron and Mav, and now LeBron comes back. And I'm under LeBron's wing. So now this lamp, heat lamp's even hotter on me. I'm not playing. I don't got confidence on the field. And now I'm taking out my anger on my day-to-day, like, interaction, my team. I'm struggling, but not letting anybody know.
Right.
So, like, my whole, like, gripe with Cleveland is not really anything as what I've made it to be. And I think that's just a bitterness of, like, how things went and me not realizing that I did it to myself for a long point in time.
Do you remember the first time you tried hard drugs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
What was it about it that made you try it? Did you think because I'm Johnny Football, I can handle this? I can do something that no one else has been able to do. Do a hard drug and be able to still function and do everything I need to do, even though I tried this.
Okay. That persona that I had on the football field of being able to have that confidence translated over into the party scene as well. I'm the guy.
Right.
Just like I am on the field, in the club, in the streets. So it's all in front of you if you want it and you're hanging around the wrong circles. It ain't hard to find at all.
Right.
So, you know, you get around people who you think you look up to or this or that, and then it just goes. And then it kind of goes and it snowballs and it keeps getting worse. And you go from cocaine to Oxycontin to Percocets to mushroom. I mean, to, I look at the mushrooms as a different thing now. That's not a good thing to say, but like the harder drugs, the drugs that like tear you down. I never did anything with needles, never did anything like that. But the coke and the oxys and the Percocet were very, very tumultuous in my life and like popped their head, especially the days of wandering around the Hollywood Hills. And it makes sense why you see me so sporadic. And like, I was 210 pounds when I left Cleveland. I was 170 pounds sitting in Vegas that August, that September, October, whatever it was later in that year. How you lose 40 pounds? You're on a strict diet of blow.
Oh, I was about to say, only you don't want either one of them. I mean, you lose 40 pounds in that length of time, you're on crack.
Or Ozempic.
So that's the new thing now. Touche, you're right about that, bro.
And at that point in time, man, I would look in a mirror and I didn't see myself any different than when I was in Cleveland.
Really?
Until I stepped on a scale at the Cosmopolitan Hotel in Las Vegas, I didn't realize I had lost 40 pounds.
Wow.
At all. And people were hitting me up like this, and I remember these pictures came out, and I was like, damn, what am I doing? Ah, whatever, we'll figure that out later. Let's go again.
Let's go again. So as an athlete, you're very competitive. When you do drugs, do you still have that competitive nature? Like when you with your boys, you're like, shh, man, I ain't finna let you one up me.
You can't. I'm a tank when it comes to the party. I mean, I could party. We hang with the best of them. Like, I ain't saying that to brag. It's not something to really sit
but it's the truth.
And glorify. But it's true. You put somebody that you think in your life can really go that distance with the Henny or with the drugs or whatever you want, I'm gonna go 12 rounds with you.
I mean, Johnny, you a small man, bro.
I'm a little thick, I guess. And I'll never forget, probably about week 13 or 14 of the season, I'm walking out of Coach Pettine's office, or I'm upstairs in the where the coaches' offices are in Cleveland. And I walk by Jimmy O'Neill's office, and he's like, hey, Johnny, come in here for a sec. I'm like, oh, it's our defensive coordinator. I'm like, what's up, Coach? And I'm chill with everybody. Like, I'm up, that's just how I am. And he's like, he's sitting back at his desk. I got his foot up and he goes, you know, we'd be a really good football player if you got your head out of your ass. And I'm like, so caught off guard. Now this confidence that I'm building is immediately just, now, I don't know if he meant it in a way or just like, you know, you're 2-12 and your team is struggling and you're like, you know, looking to ways to vent or whatever it was, but this happened. And when I left that office, and I went back down to the quarterback room. I was white as a ghost. So white that Josh McCown looked at me just like you are and was like, what happened? And I'm like stuttering through this story. And Josh McCown gets up out of his seat and walks straight up to that fucking office. Now, what was said, I don't exactly know what it is. But when he came back in that room, he was pissed. He said, you don't do that. In this league with a young guy and somebody like you, just don't.
You build him up, you can't break his confidence.
Break me in half. And from there, I was broken. I didn't give a fuck. I didn't care about that team. I didn't care about that, what my role was. And there's no excuse. All of these things led up to be the perfect failure. And at the end of the day, it's on my shoulders. But when you're starting to get a little momentum and you get broken like that, that's when the running to Vegas happened and me missing the last game of the season. That's when the wig story comes out and when I'm really like running. 2-3 weeks after this. When this happened, I go straight home. I go straight to my basement. I get the biggest bottle of Hennessy out of the bottom of the drawer, and now I'm sitting in the basement. I'm listening to Future every second, every day. I'm partying by myself just to try and like get out of this reality of a situation that I'm living in with a head coach that wants nothing to do with me, with a DC who's saying if I get my head out of my ass, we'll have a chance. Just this whole perfect storm of just like, fuck this. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, I was done.
What was your relationship like with Josh Gordon? You had a guy, and we know he's had his issues, his struggles, very similar to what you're sharing with us right now. What was your relationship with Josh?
Great. I saw a side of Josh that the rest of the world didn't get to see. I saw a guy that was from that trap, that from that bad neighborhood growing up, who had beat the odds to be able to get there. One of the most physically talented specimens that you'll ever see on a football field. He struggled with a lot of the same things that I struggle with. And I tried my best throughout those times to be a better influence around Josh than a lot of other people were, because a lot of his boys didn't give a shit at that point in time. And, you know, should I have done things differently in our relationship to not, you know, sway him certain ways? Because I think I definitely had the juice. We didn't do drugs together.
You didn't do drugs.
We didn't do drugs together. He would, he loved the weed, man. He loved it. And when he would come over to my apartment, all he ever wanted to do was roll it and put it on the counter. He just wanted to be included on the whole thing,
right?
Which is the way his mind kind of worked. But he never smoked around me. He never, I mean, we went on trips together. We went to Aspen. We went everywhere. Like, JG was my dog to the core. And funny you ask, I just spoke to him yesterday, and he sounds like he's in the best place that I've seen him in years.
That's awesome.
And it takes time and getting away from it. And for me and him, we're talking about golf now. And golf is kind of like an avenue that I never thought me and JG would be able to like talk about golf, go play. And like, golf has really shifted my mindset and being able to still continuously give me competition.
Mm-hmm.
But as much as it is against other people when you're playing, golf is always about yourself and battling yourself 6 inches between your ears, and then, you know, getting in a good headspace to go up and hit a good shot.
John, I want to get you out on here. You mentioned that once you left Cleveland, that you contemplated suicide and you spent all your money. Clearly, that's the lowest point of your life. Was it a culmination of, I'm not where I thought I would be as far as in the NFL? You're in the NFL, but you're not playing, and you're not, you feel you're not getting the support that you need or deserves in order for Johnny to be Johnny, because you just, sometimes you need somebody, just a little support. You need somebody to say, Johnny, hey, bro, you can do this. Pat you on the back instead of kicking you in the butt all the time.
It's
when did you know? So what happened when you're contemplating taking your own life?
It's different. It's not that I don't have the support. It's not that I don't have the team, because at that point in time, I had every single person you could ever think trying to reach out. And I'm just blocking people at every single turn. And I think for me, it was something I didn't find out until I went to play in Canada again. I remember having this feeling in Cleveland that I didn't love football, okay? Oh. But it was a feeling. And when I didn't play for a while and I'm out of the league and I'm trying to get back in, I end up going to Canada. And when I walked into that locker room for the first time and walked out on a practice football field, every single feeling that I had felt in that Cleveland locker room mm-hmm. came back to me in that Canadian locker room. And I knew right then and there that I didn't truly, truly love this game to the point of where I need to do what I need to do to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So the suicide thing comes in when you look at life and you say, I fucked up the biggest golden opportunity that you could have ever imagined. And this is where I think whenever you said what you said about the Fan Controlled Football League, it is sad, Shannon. What you said on that day is exactly right. It is sad to watch a guy who had all the potential in the world, all the opportunity, all the resources and team around him, and he still goes, fuck that. But what if I told you today that I don't think that I loved what I was doing enough to ever get into the mix of doing it the right way? I went through that period with Josh McCown where we did it, but like it never was like, over
it
the top.
Stick.
And I'm not in the gym, I'm not grinding, I'm not doing the things that I did back in the day that made me great. So now I realize that I didn't love the game of football like that. I just happened to be immensely talented at it. I happened to have great teammates around me, great coaches, great perfect storm to be able to get me to walk across that hall at Radio City Music Hall, walk across that stage. So that feeling came back in Canada. I realized I don't love the game. And then when the game's gone from you, there's a huge transition, and every guy will tell you what the transition is to figuring out your identity and who you are as a person. And I truly feel like from 2017 on, that's 7 years, that's what I've been doing. And my mission has been to try and stay away, get a little bit of this hype off me, and just live and find out about life, to be a great uncle, to be a great brother, to be a great son, to be a great role model for Texas A&M, to be a great alumni, you know, a leader, to be a great like resource for my guys who play at Texas A&M. And these are all things that I'm trying to do moving forward that I've completely neglected in the past.
If I could say, Johnny, you could go back, what would probably be one of the two things that you wish you could do over?
If I could go back to a certain point in time, I would drop myself right after that in the locker room of the Oklahoma game in the Cotton Bowl. Knowing what I know now, I would have known how to handle myself. I would have known how important and imperative it is to be a better teammate than just numbers on a field on Saturday. There's something to be said about how your guys ride for you when you're doing the right things in the building. Mm-hmm. And that 2013 year for us at Texas A&M, a lot of internal problems were happening because their leader is distracted. Their horse that makes this whole carriage go is fucked up. Mm. And the shame that I have for letting guys down like Cedric Oboye and like Jake Matthews and Mike Evans is the same shame that I carry with me to this day about letting down Joe Thomas as a guy who's in the end of his Hall of Fame career and is looking for somebody to come in and lead this team, and then you get me. It's tough, you know. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to have been the guy that have let down some overall really great athletes of my time and of my generation. Something I carry, hopefully, with my head high right now, but at the same time, internally, I know it eats me alive. Because they did more for me than I gave in return to them. Mm-hmm. And what a shallow, kind of selfish way of life that I was living at that point in time. And I have a lot of regret. Like, I regret wasting a couple of Joe Thomas's last years in Cleveland. I regret disrespecting LeBron and not making sure.
Taking advantage of that situation.
Not just making sure what it meant to me. Showing him that I give a fuck enough to just do what's right. To listen to Mav and listen to the team they built around me. You know, it fucks me up that I messed up our second year at Texas A&M and we went 7-4 or whatever. Because that was our chance to win a national
we
title.
We got him off the game against Duke.
Had a cool game against Duke. One that was like a legendary kind of tale on it. But like, I almost wish to this day that we lost that game because I would have came back.
Right.
So us having that legendary run against a bowl game that's kind of like, kind of wish we would have lost because then I would have came back with a vengeance. And I probably wouldn't have got drafted because I would have gotten in trouble.
Right.
But it doesn't sit right with me, certain things. And those are three things. How I wasted my 2013 season, how I treated the legends in that building in Cleveland, and how I treated LeBron and Mav. And, you know, from there, I can even take it a step further and say in 2016, I don't think I treated Drake the way that I should have with representing the clothes that I was wearing and his OVO brand and his label and everything. You know, at that point in time, I was so selfish that I was dragging everybody that was tied to me through the mud. Now it's regret. I'm not harboring on this in any kind of way. I'm just calling it exactly what it is and the way that I feel about it. And, you know, I owe those people apology, and hopefully one day down the line, I'll be able to have the opportunity as a man to be able to look them in the eye and be able to do that.
As we sit here today, how is Johnny Manziel doing?
Probably the happiest I've ever been in my life. And I think I went through a period of time after the documentary came out where I maybe acted a little bit like I did in the past, and it's easy to let ego and fame and stuff kind of creep back in. And what I've done now since really, you know, December-ish, You know, it's new, 3 months, but I've insulated myself in a way with a team that I can trust, people that I love that are doing nothing but looking out for my best wishes, best regards. They know me. They're not letting me cheat. They're holding me accountable. And it's not going to happen overnight. It is going to be a slow, gradual process to get to who I want to be as a man. But in my opinion, sitting here today with you and enjoying the hell out of this conversation,
so have I.
I feel like I'm on the right path to where I need to go. And as Johnny Manziel, not as Johnny Football.
You were once married, and this is the last one, you were once married. Could you see yourself being married again, or is there someone in Johnny Manziel's life that's keeping Johnny grounded?
Nope. It is my friends right now, my family. You know, it is my two nieces with a third one on the way that I talk to every single day on FaceTime that are really my reason why I'm still here.
Right.
And a huge reason of my success is based off my sister. And my mother and my father and my true core friends and my team I have around me. So love will come when it comes. But for right now, I'm focused on getting a bag, taking care of my money, getting back to where I need to be, being the best brother, being the best uncle, and being there for my family and my university in a way I need to be to make people proud that I want to make proud. I don't want to continuously keep letting people down when I feel like I'm destined for bigger, greater things than that in life.
I am so proud that you're sitting here today.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And you found your reason to live.
It was me, Cat Williams, sitting next to each other in a little bitty room. And he was like, man, come on in. We got this because Tiny Lister didn't want to do my good friend.
Yeah.
God bless his soul.
Yeah.
Tiny Lister didn't want to do the third one. And they said, we got a new character, a guy named Damon and the whole thing. I was like, and see, you got to understand too. I had nothing to lose.
Right.
Like when I say nothing to lose, I came in there like Craig and Day Day. Just the niggas I want to see, you know. Bro, I had nothing. I went back to Flint on them. I was like, oh, this is where I came. These are the cats I knew.
Right.
And I came in there, man, and off the cue, everybody like, ah, they're like, oh. And then Cat came in and just the audition. And they said, you in. And Friday after next, I saw Cube probably about a month ago. And I walked up to him, man. I said, dude, thank you. I said, you have no idea how many careers you started just by giving us that shot.
Right.
A lot of people never, ever really give props what props is due.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're like, well, I didn't get that much money. And but dude, that was my start.
No.
Well, listen, I was in a little bitty cubicle. Man, I was just thankful. I was walking around. And listen, and what was so crazy is me and Cat was homeless at the time.
Wow.
So Cat was living in his trailer. And me and Cat said, hey, man. And I remember talking to Cat. I said, Cat, I said, we never get another opportunity. We got to make sure they remember us. I said, because we the two new cats in this whole thing. They know everybody else.
Right.
I said, but it's me and you. And remember, man, I was not going to let what happened in my football career happen to my entertainment career.
Man, I'm listening that you tell the story, T. And the way you telling the story, football never gave you the high that what you got by just doing that.
Exactly. I knew I was in my destiny. When I say, and this is what I'm saying, I found my destiny. I was gone. When people see that scene in Friday After Next, look, you turn the sound down, it ain't a comedy.
Right.
We was crying.
Right.
We were deep. They was so in it. He was crying. I was crying. People were sitting by the monitors like, what are we looking at right now? Because I was so gone in, and I said, this is where, and then it was so wild because I didn't even want money anymore. I said, I want that feeling again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Right. It's too, because you could talk about athletes and money and all that stuff, but there's a point when, I'm sure, when you just catching and doing everything right, you want to chase that again. They call it the zone. They call it what it's just flow, whatever that is. And let me tell you, you know when I hit that flow again? When I was doing White Chicks. That movie, White Chicks. Everything I said just blew.
Friday Up Next, White Chicks came off of.
It came after that.
Right.
Because again, you're talking about the whole Black Hollywood is very small.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw, and once Friday After Next hit, people were like, this dude. And so what was so great is Keenan Ivory Wayans was like, hey, man, we got to get this dude a shot.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they're like, man, we want some of that on us. And it kept on all my business, Shannon, in this town has been repeat business. I mean, the reason I was with all these Sandler movies, Adam Sandler called me. But the thing is, when I did Longest Yard, which was my revenge on the NFL.
Right.
Me and Michael Irvin, right. The whole movie, I was like, this is the one everybody gonna remember. Like, good God. Like, who gets that?
Right.
You know what I mean? And I remember Chris Rock was like, hey, man, he's on the movie, Longest Yard. He said, dude, you're killing. I got something for you. I said, what is it? He said, don't worry about it. I got something for you. I go home, the script for Everybody Hates Chris. It's literally on my doorstep. I open that up. He's like, I want you to play my dad. Because he saw me and my wife and my two kids out there in Santa Fe, New Mexico, when we was filming Longest Yard. He was watching. And that's the thing, another people, you got to remember, everybody is watching. Everybody is watching. And so then I played Chris's dad. And Everybody Hates Chris for 4 years straight. This man, when I look at my life, man, I just thank God for every opportunity. And now this is another thing, because I'm now reached the point, because I play with all these guys and they're gone. Now I'm losing actors. Man, Andre Bauer passed away last week. And he took me under his wing, man. You're talking about one of the best actors.
Right.
Of our generation.
Right.
I mean, Juilliard trained, absolutely incredible, Emmy Award winning, dramatic beast.
Right. Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Right.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine, who was able to come and flip it to a comedy like that. And I was like, man, what is the secret? And he was like a super all pro who could have looked down on all of us, but decided he was just going to pull us all up with him. 61 years old. He was like my big brother.
Right.
I look at guys that are dying. When I look at Michael Clark Duncan's gone. Mm-hmm. Tiny Lister, gone. Lance Reddick, gone. And I'm like, Chadwick Boseman, gone. We did a movie Draft Day together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I'm going, man, you don't have forever. You don't. You got to go for it. You got to get what you got, what you are come to get now. And you can't waste time. You can't treat it like, well, I'll whatever.
Cause, tomorrow.
Because I've seen it in the NFL. And everybody thought, and this is the thing, everybody had determined certain people that already won. Like, I won life. He won. You know, people say, hey, won the internet, whatever. It ain't never over it. It's never how you start. It's how you finish.
Right.
And let me tell you, when I'm done, and I'll be honest with you, man, I'm just getting started. I truly, truly feel I have the same energy that I had when I first started. I'm really thankful to be sitting here with you right now. But I admire you for just your transition. You know what I mean? And the energy that you bring. Your passion is palpable. And I'm the same way. I'm 100% passion.
Right.
That's all I am.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't know no other way. I have no other way. I do everything like I'm getting $1 million.
When you sat down for the audition to read with Cat, did you know Cat prior to that?
Nope. Not at all.
And you guys became pretty cool after
that. We became amazing friends. And what's so crazy, I used to watch him because a movie, when you shoot a movie, then you got to wait a year and a half for it to come out.
Correct.
So you just wait, like people, you're like, man, well, I got this thing coming. They're like, yeah, right, whatever. Right. And you know what's so funny? After Friday, after next, I had to go back doing security. I had to go back.
Right.
Because I didn't have nothing else to turn to.
Right.
But I knew it was coming.
Right.
And what was so crazy, I would do commercials and different things, but I would go watch Cat Williams at the Hollywood Park Casino. He had his own room.
Mm-hmm.
And this man was the funniest man I ever seen, which was crazy. And then I'll never forget when he started selling out the Universal Amphitheater and watching them blow up. This is another thing, too, to watch people all... It's funny because I see kids that's been on set, and now they're superstars. Now, you know, like Tyler James Williams is now a superstar.
Right.
You know, I've watched people. This is you never, never know what's going to happen. You know, you look at things and you go, oh, my God, this man was. Listen, one great example. We were at the BET Awards and I saw this little kid walking around with a little hat on. And I was like, hey, I got his mixtape. I said, Kendrick. He's like, you know who I am? It's Kendrick Lamar, bro. I said, man, your mixtape, dude, Section 80 is amazing. I said, you are the next. I said, Rebecca, this is Kendrick. He was like, you know who I am? I said, who? I said, I love you. I said, I think you are going to be the future. And what's so crazy is that he called me a few years later, ended up doing a video with him.
Right.
Because he said, remember when you told me you knew who I was? Remember this? You told me I was going to be doing something great. Look at this, man. Now, look, tell me he's not the best
in the
world right now. And I'm so proud. And the thing is, too, man, there's another thing I had to learn and that the NFL taught me that I had to unlearn, competing. I decided to never compete with people. This was my problem. Because they call it the sin of comparison.
Right.
When I'm looking at what you got and comparing what I got, it's always going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Always.
Right.
Because you're always going to come up short.
Yeah. Yes.
Somebody always got more.
Right.
And then somebody always got less, but you always want more.
Right.
And I realized, man, that creativity was the exact opposite of competition.
Right.
If I'm being creative, I'm not competing. So I decided, you know what? Because everybody was like, hey, man, you got to be like Tiny. You got to be this. You got to blah, blah, blah. I was like, no. I'm going to be me. And they was like, yeah, but you kind of weird. I said, yeah, I am.
That's what made me unique.
I am. All right. Listen, first of all, it got to the point where we read scripts now that we want a Terry Crews type because they know that's just me.
Right.
And I decided by just being creative, that was my ticket out of that world of competition because this is the thing, man. The league is always...
It's got to be competition.
It's like, hey, man, you versus so-and-so.
Right.
You wait. First of all, you got to fight the people in your own locker room first.
Yeah.
Before you even go up against another team. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then you always being judged, like, well, you missed a step, and did you miss that? But he didn't.
Right.
The coaches would never, they will always tell you what you messed up on.
Right.
And then being black, we would go into the locker room, and if you hurt, they act like, you act like you don't want to play. I'll say, hey, man, first of all, the white kids get it hurt, and they're like, oh, yeah, he's hurt.
Right.
But I've never, ever treated, they never, ever treated any black guy I knew in the locker room like he was really hurt.
Wow.
Like he was trying to cut out on the game.
So in other words, you said, I got to unlearn, because you know it's a jungle mentality, because someone is literally trying to take food off your table. Someone is trying to take a roof from over your kid and your family head to make sure they have one. But once you got into the entertainment space, you're like, I'm not competing against him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what can I do?
I'm in my lane.
First of all, I didn't go to school to act.
Right.
I didn't go to Juilliard.
Right.
You're talking to a dude who ain't supposed to be here.
Right.
Everything I'm getting ain't supposed to have.
Right.
So I'm already behind.
Right.
You know what I mean? But then I realized, wait a minute, if I just bring what I bring, I'm ahead. You know what I mean?
Right.
If I bring what only I bring to a project, because you can't do what I do.
Right.
You know what I mean? And this is the one thing that the magic, and this is what I want to tell every young man is trying to transition out. That's the way it works for everything. That you have something that no one else has, but it's up to you to find it.
Right.
You got to find it. And you don't find it by comparing yourself with everybody else or whatever. You find it by finding out what you want to do. And this is when I had to make the hard realization that, man, maybe football was it wasn't for me, but it got me to where I am, and I'm very thankful for it. But let me tell you, I love the game. In fact, I don't even have a team. I just love the players.
Right.
It's just, sitting here with players, talking about, you know, what we came through. It feels like a fraternity, man.
Right.
It feels like something we can therapize each other.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because we all know it. We all seen it.
Right.
And we all played those games
right.
together. I mean, I was there when they was like, ain't no CTE. Sit down. You just weak.
Right.
I was like, man, my head hurt. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm seeing double.
Right.
And they're like, man, look, you just weak. I was there when they was telling everybody it wasn't real.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, this is real, man. This is real.
You've been buying land lately.
Mm-hmm.
How many properties have you purchased, and what's the meaning behind that?
It's been about 12. I'm on like my 12th house.
Okay.
My 12th house now. But I always said that I've learned that, you know, when it comes to income, I wanted to put it somewhere in where it can grow.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just be out here splurging and stuff like that. I think investments is really big, and I feel like real estate, buying land and stuff like that, it's one of the best investments in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's especially in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, for sure.
People moving there crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So if you got any income, man, I feel like real estate is, it's been good, man. Shout out to my guy Gene, man. And he was the one that set me up right when it came to it, man. And we've been building for a long time, you know what I'm saying? And we got a lot of great stuff in store, you know. We got a workshop coming up that I would love for people to be a part of, man. If you're in Atlanta, Georgia, February 17th and 18th, we're doing a workshop. You can go to my real estate page, there'll be designs, and you can get the information. So we want to, you know, get people learning about real estate, you know what I'm saying? How to build, you know, how to get money. How to find the right money to invest, you know, so how to get that right loan, you know, stuff like that, man. Yeah.
Well, you seem very, very frugal with your money, very wise,
mm-hmm.
but everybody's made a dumb purchase.
Oh, for sure.
What was your dumb purchase?
My dumb purchase? I ain't gonna say it's dumb, but I got a Porsche, so crazy. It ain't dumb, but... Boy, I had to get that motherfucker, I swear to God. That Porsche.
What'd you get, 911
Turbo? I had to get that. Yeah. And I like cars. I love fast cars.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you have, are you like old school cars or
there's I got an 84 SS Monte Carlo.
Monte Carlo, okay.
Yeah, I got one of those. I got a Hellcat, my Hellcat truck.
Mm-hmm.
I got a Benz truck. What else I got? Yeah, that's it. Yeah, but I love cars though. Mm-hmm. Like if I make crazy purses, it'd be cars. Nah, I love cars.
You're not that big of a jewelry guy, splurge guy in jewelry.
Nah, and my homeboy be getting on me all the time. I got jewelry, and he be wanting me to wear all of them on stage. He like, boy, if it was me, what a whole box. So I said my dog in Detroit, man. He be like, what a whole box.
What's your biggest purchase outside of real estate?
My biggest purchase outside of real estate, I own two 18-wheeler trucks too.
Okay.
Yeah, I got that too.
So you have like, do you have a trucking company or just trying to build a trucking service?
Yeah, Desert Bank Trucking LLC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got that too.
What you haul?
I'm invested with FedEx.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm connected with them. So I got them on the road. I got about four drivers now. They switch out. But yeah, that's another investment that I got as well. That's been doing pretty good for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say other crazy purses too. Of course, jewelry. Jewelry is a thing that, you know. But now, I can get me a nice little watch and just wear me a nice little chain and shine a little bit.
Yeah, you seem really simplistic when it comes to jewelry.
Yeah, I'm cool. I ain't got to come in with that big chain on.
Right.
You feel me? Like, I can do it. And I may do it sometimes. I'll pop out to the club and shine a little bit.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, my boy said, put on all of them. And I might put on two of them.
Two of them.
And I might put that real bust down on. Yeah. And I have to do what I got to do.
Yeah.
Cause boy, when it shine,
that thing glitz.
And boy, them girls look at you too.
You mentioned earlier that you started your own production company.
Mm-hmm.
What have you learned most about the business of comedy?
The business of comedy, I would say, it's serious.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people out there, I think they should, of course, have their own business when it comes to this, man. Because, like I said, you never know when you would not get an opportunity. And me having my own production company, it allows me to continue to work whenever I want to, work. Mm-hmm. I ain't got to wait on Hollywood to give me a movie or whatever it is. And also I've learned that, even with that, it takes time for me to connect and get my stuff to that level. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you just got to play the game for your stuff to get there.
The long game.
You got to play the long game. You know what I'm saying? Of course, one day, Desert Banks Production will be a company that will be big. But like I said, it takes time. I got plenty of ideas of stuff that we are already presenting to different companies that, that we want to partnership with, that we have meetings with TV shows, feature films, stuff like that. And it's always presented. Desert Banks Production want to present you guys this script for this treatment for this. And, like I said, I got my team that always with me. When it come to me, being in these meetings or whatever it is. But like I said, I always had a goal. And I've a lot of stuff that I've shot in already, it's a proven, like the numbers are already there.
Right.
So I'm letting people know it already worked. The TV show I want to do, it's already there, I already shot it. The sitcom I want to do, it's already there. The short film I want to turn into a feature film, the numbers are already there. I'm telling you, it works already.
Right.
So it's like, it's just up to that company, whatever it is, to actually believe in it. Because I know people say all the time, just continue to do it on yourself, put it out yourself, whatever it is, but man, hey man, for me, my goal is to have my show on Netflix. I want to be big. I want to be with the Lions. I want to be with the Paramounts. I want to have my stuff connected to those people. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's what I want to do. Yeah.
Why was it so important for you to believe and invest in Desi?
I think that's what, at the time, I didn't know, but I think that's what God wanted me to do.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what God wanted me. God wanted me to believe in myself first. And to know that you can still be successful with yourself,
mm-hmm.
than having to worry about other people.
Right.
You can have your goals, whatever it is, but you can still be successful.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, like I said, in this world, in this industry, a lot of people wait on opportunities, man. Mm-hmm. We see it all the time. Like, just imagine how the writer's strike hit, man. A lot of actors wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They was out of work. When making the income they wanted, you know what I'm saying? Thank God they got what they finally got what they deserve, if. But I just think that's the leeway when you want to do your own thing. When you want to build up your own fan base, you want to, get that going. Mm-hmm. I think that's up to you what you want to do. I'm just one of the guys, like I'm a hustler, man. I don't want to sit and wait. I like to grind, you know what I'm saying? So I know this going to pay off one day.
Right.
It's going to... They gonna tap in soon.
Have you gone on, if any or how many, have you gone on some auditions?
Auditions?
Yeah.
Oh, tons. I auditioned so many things. I done got close to a lot of different movies, man, that I was numbered up against the lead. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I've been up close to a lot of guys. You know what I'm saying? Thank God, like I said, I just booked a major film, A24 film, that I'll be shooting soon. We're still waiting on the dates to get for that. Can't wait for people to see that. But that is a step that I feel like that's going to open up doors for me as well. Like I said, I'm also in pitch meetings with other movies that mm-hmm. I'm the lead of, you know, TV shows that I'm the lead of, you know, that people don't know right now. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, people don't see the other work that goes on.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They just see what they see. But like I said, it takes time. It's a process. Mm-hmm. But like I said, this is opportunity. This interview, I guarantee this interview, this going to open up some doors for me. For sure. For sure. I think so.
I hope so.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's about.
Have any audition you've gone on and you've turned down like, damn, I probably should have taken that one?
Yeah, it's been some movies. It's been movies that, I've turned down that gave other people opportunities. Yeah. And the only reason why I didn't accept it, one movie I didn't accept it was because I just felt like it wasn't right. It was just too much going on with it. You know what I'm saying? I was like, you know, and then they wanted me to, at the time, it was like late, they wanted me to like cancel a weekend that I had. And I was like, nah, it's too late for that. My show already sold out here, so I'm gonna go do this. And whoever y'all get this opportunity to, hey man, it was just meant for them. I'll wait my chance to get mine.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't no pressure.
So what have you learned about the auditions that you have gone on?
I've done well with all of them. It's just, I feel like it's just up to the people deciding on who they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And that's okay too. And that's what I had to learn with my acting coach, Dwayne Boyd and Todd. They used to always tell me all the time, it ain't you. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes they may need a guy with a full beard. You know, you probably acted well, but we need a guy with a full beard. Or, you know, you did great, but you sound Southern, you know. Or we need a person that can play a doctor instead of, you know, it's just little stuff like
right.
that. I do my thing on audition,
right.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm all about the finding the right project.
Right.
I don't want to just be in no movie just to be in.
Just say I'm in.
Nah, man, like... That's what they don't make it legendary.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I feel like I said, let's go back to Chris Tucker. Friday was for him. I hear, you know, shout out to the OGs who auditioned for that. I know it was a guy that was supposed to play that role, but I feel like it wouldn't have maybe not been done like if Chris couldn't win the guy.
Mm-mm.
Mike Ells, Day Day. Can't nobody beat Day Day.
Correct.
You see what I'm saying? Just little stuff like that. Those films was for them. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I want for myself. I want that film to be for me. You know, it's no rush for me to get just being something. The stuff that we're working on, it's around Dizzy. It's around, you know, what's going to be good for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Would you ever do a Tyler Perry movie?
Man, I auditioned for Tyler Perry.
Did you?
A few times.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if it's the right role, yeah. I mean, I ain't against working with Tyler.
Right.
I think Tyler dope. Tyler's a legend.
Is there a role that you wouldn't play?
That I wouldn't play? Yeah. I wouldn't play, like, I don't want to do nothing outside of what makes me feel uncomfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
In other words, you don't want to dress up.
What do you mean?
Put a dress on, put a wig on.
I mean, look, bro, like.
If necessary?
Because
you do.
I grow my character. I've done short films,
right.
But I did that because my grandmama loved it.
Right,
like she loved that character. Recipe my grandmama. Like I did that for her.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's
you ain't
just
tripping
fun.
On that.
Hell no, nah, I ain't worried about that. You know what I'm saying? And that character is based off her. You know what I'm saying? So all that I don't care about that. You know what I'm saying? But now you ain't finna come to my dressing room, and I probably been playing this role. And you say, hey, can you put this on? No, I'm not doing that. Hell no.
How was it acting with Issa Rae and Regina Hall?
In Little. When I was on set, I seen Regina. I didn't see Issa though.
Okay.
I seen Regina. So yeah, I seen Will Packer too. So
yeah.
I didn't really have a
an interaction.
Yeah, I ain't really connect. Mm-hmm. You know, my scene was quick. It was real quick, so
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Issa Rae said Hollywood is scared and clueless after her show was canceled. She said, she also said black stories are less of a priority and there aren't a lot of smart execs anymore. What's been your experience, your personal experience with Hollywood?
Well, that's crazy though. Like the black show, cause like what I'm presenting is black shows. And you know, I would say on these pitches, you know, we got these ideas that work. Like I said, we understand the culture. I feel like Hollywood should really allow us to, like we got the numbers. We showing y'all this shit work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It works.
Yes,
you know
for
what I'm
sure.
saying? It works. So it's like, let us like, at least try it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, at least try it. And, you know, of course, y'all got guys, if y'all got writers, whatever it is, I mean, we can connect. Let's bring it together and see how we can, like, make this really work.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And understand who coming to the table, like, me being a part of the culture. I got a fan base. These people want to see me on that level. This is what's going to bring numbers to you guys' platform. And because at the end of the day, it's a numbers game.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Y'all trying to get y'all, make y'all money back or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? So we got to think about stuff like that.
Right.
That, you know, and we take it serious. Yeah.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.